This is Our Prisons the Answer, a monthly show on Justice Radio. I'm Leo Hilton, a PhD student, restorative justice practitioner, and messy human being currently incarcerated at Maine State Prison, trying to figure out how we can collectively come together to lessen the amount of harm in the world and create more healing. I'm your host for this week. This show explores how we keep our communities safe and asks the question, are prisons the answer? With March being Women's History Month, I have the honor today of interviewing Tyler Redsky, a queer, non-binary trans settler who I have had the pleasure to begin knowing through our transformative and abolitionist approaches to restorative justice. Also joining this conversation is Ebony Harper, founder of California Transcends, a trans activist, human rights activist, and champion of intersectionality, living into her racial and transgender identities, working to make a difference for marginalized communities, both locally and nationally. This is part two of our conversation on the silencing and absencing of trans women in Women's History Month and the rest of the year. Specifically, we are looking at the targeting, victimization, and ongoing violence against trans women, in particular, trans women of color. What does safety look like for them? We need to uplift this hidden history and learn about the non-carceral community safety mechanisms that have been utilized in two-spirit LGBTQIA+ communities forever. We left off last time talking about the violent role of legislation in jeopardizing the health, wellness, and very lives of trans folks. From here, understanding that state systems do not protect you, really interested to know, without the ability to rely on various state systems, what community safety mechanisms have you been able to rely on to keep you and other non-gender binary folks in your communities safe? Ebony, you want to kick us off?
Yes, thank you, Leo. Listen, our community has, I will say, never actually been safe, even though we would say it's more unsafe, but we have never experienced safety like maybe some other communities. We always have to be vigilant. The world has always been hostile towards us. Maybe we were getting to a point where it was just a little bit less hostile. So we are experienced at creating safety for our own community, creating spaces that are affirming, and even on the mental health end, just being there, kind of like you were saying in the beginning, as another empathetic human being. And so this is what we do. We rely on our community for systems of safety. What is evolving out of the fascism that's going around right now, we're going to have to learn new techniques and new ways of providing safety. But one thing here we do during the holidays, like Thanksgiving or Christmas, we provide an alternate space. So instead of Thanksgiving, we call it Transgiving. And we provide a space where trans folks that aren't being accepted by their family, that maybe just at their home, isolated and depressed. You have a lot of us that isolate. Some of us are very well known and public advocates. And as soon as we get home, we're isolated because we have a fear of, I know people that are very well known that has been assaulted just trying to get some fruit at the grocery store. But the world that we live in, our reality is wholly different. And sometimes if you haven't experienced it, it's really hard to understand, because sometimes you're like, you look like the gender that you're presenting as, are you? But it's deeper than that. It's way deeper, and we're under a constant threat. So we have to be there for each other. So Transgiving, that took place this last November, and that was our eighth one here in Sacramento, California. And they're happening all over the U.S. I love that they're popping up in New York, in L.A., in Arizona, even one in Nevada, and other spaces. So I love that this alternate, we've always had alternate spaces that were more affirming. And so this year, we had a space that you have to enter a code to get in. And so we're screening who can come in and out of our spaces, which is rare, are different from how we used to do things. you know, the door used to just be open. Now we are being targeted more so than usual, because let's be clear, we have always had a target on our back. The target has never left our back, but now they are organizing around that target. So we have to be very keen and aware on who's in our spaces and who we are allowing in our spaces. We keep ourselves safe in multiple ways. There's also food insecurity in our community. We utilize, you know, community-like funding. I don't know if Tyler probably is experienced with that, but yeah, we utilize Venmo to get each other food. And because all that's going on, we aren't just trans people. That is just like a minuscule thing in our world. There is genocide going on. You know, we have other things. The trans thing is very small. That's just a part of how our being decided to show up on this planet. But there are other factors in this world that has oppressed us, is making us feel heavy. Even our cis friends right now, there's a lot of heaviness going around. And so you see even more isolation than usual. And so we're making sure that we have space, that those spaces are safe, and that we love and show each other empathy, even when we are not showing up what people would consider normal. Even we have our people in our trans community, and we're so vastly different. You can talk to 20 different trans folks, and you can get 20 different answers on what it means to be trans. They are could be vastly different in presentation. So it's not a like the right wing is trying to make it like there's one trans ideology. There isn't not one. There's not just one trans ideology. You talk to 20 different trans folks, you got 20 different trans ideologies. It's like trying to say all people with brown eyes are the same and believe the same. It's just, that's ridiculous. And so, yeah, we come from different backgrounds. But one thing is for sure, we are experts at making sure that we have community, because that's what we've had to rely on. Now, sometimes we get in fights and debates because we all have different political beliefs and life philosophy. We just differ, okay? But when we're all under pressure, you see us come back together. But that's what I miss about me and Tyler's era. You saw a lot more community than you see now, but you see us coming back to that.
So you're telling me that trans folks are like real human beings? You mean like you're individual and unique and different, and you see things different, and you hear things different, you feel things different? Feels like some craziness. I'm just saying. Thank you. The tangible pieces there of the way that you keep people safe, the transgiving, using Venmo, using codes to protect yourselves, right? Screening, unfortunately, who is allowed in those spaces. These are real tangible takeaways for non-carceral approaches to how you actually take care of your people. That's incredible. Thank you. Tyler?
Oh, it's so beautiful to hear you speak, Ebony. I'm really grateful. Yeah, the isolation piece. I was telling this to Leo the other day, but you know, I'm out on the Dawnland Wabanaki territory, so-called Maine, and it's lonely. You know, I'm from New York City, and that isolation is real. So I'm just really grateful on a personal note that I get to be in conversation with you. For me, it's so much of what you said resonates on every level, and it's that active community care and safety. I mentioned it earlier, right? It's like when my family kicked me out, especially on my father and that side, it was like I knew that if I were dying, that no one would come in the hospital. Like that I was so far outside of their experience. And that kind of rejection for trans folks, for Two-Spirit, and also queer folks. And it's so much a part of our trans identity that I think one of the things that when Ebony, I heard you ending with it, it's like, yeah, it didn't really matter. Like you didn't have to get along with people. It's just like you loved each other because you understood that was all, that you were the only people that cared. And I think that I had this feeling often of like, there was this world that I wasn't really allowed to be a part of, but then I had my own little world here and family and care and encouragement and just the generosity. Like I'm always a big person of like generosity can't involve folks with access to money giving money. Like it really to me comes from like people giving absolutely everything they can, like from their heart. And I had the most experience with generosity from other trans and queer and two-spirit folks, like elders, like just giving me like whatever they could off their EBT card, you know, just like really sharing what little they had and how much that meant for me with like three teeth left, you know, like in their apartment that they'd been in for 60 years. And then I think of like other people that are like white and cis, like, and I agree with self-care, but to a point where they're like, there's this preciousness of capacity. And then for those of us that just have to survive, we just show up. Like if someone needs you, you just keep showing up because we keep catching each other. I think there is really beautiful examples I want to like uplift too, the work of queer, mostly queer women and trans women of color out of the, like that when the AIDS epidemic hit, that took care of each other, right? That like we're grabbing people off the street corner when they were kicked out of prison or getting them and finding housing and doing those kinds of really liberatory acts of care. Again, Shira Hassan's book, Saving Our Own Lives, talks about liberatory harm reduction. But I think of growing up in New York City and the first group I joined was ACT UP. And that just taught me a lot about how to show up for each other and how to be invested in each other's lives and how to be on the front lines with each other and how to do things. I was going to curse, but I stopped myself. How to do things as if you don't give a bleep, get it done, right? And like whatever the rules, because the rules aren't made for you and they don't apply for you and they definitely don't keep you safe. So whatever you got to do, like getting each other into houses, squats, safety, warm meals, a hug, that's always kind of been the way. Also, I heard what you were saying, part of this work for me as someone who practices transformational justice and restorative justice is a way to learn how to hold the harm that was done to us on these institutional levels, that then we also, because of an incredible amount of trauma and a lack of support and services that are safe, for myself at least, like I was a person who then had a lot of healing from my own trauma and went on to have difficult patterns in relationships and struggle with mental health. And seeing so many folks do that and the way that then we can be isolated or exiled or kicked out of queer and trans spaces with nowhere else to go. So for me, part of the work for trans folks, and that's why I do this work, is I work with people who caused harm because they were harmed. And Miriam Kaba, like no one comes to violence for the first time by causing it. That word just like really hits me deep in my spirit because I know that it's the conditions and the trauma that put people in a position where they make a choice to harm someone else. And it's not a choice for me. And it's our responsibility to learn how to hold it differently. But for me, I really want to work in community to keep, we need all of us and none of us are disposable. And it doesn't mean that we don't need to take responsibility for the harm that we cause or change our patterns and learn how to be accountable. But I think about often the way in which we take these like leaders like Marsha P. Johnson, rest in power, knowing what I know and the people that knew her, that was a really beautiful, spirited fire. And there was so much trauma and so much pain held in that body. And I think about the ways in which we like glorify people in their work and don't really have space for the messiness and complexity that they are as people. And I'm like, you would cancel her. Like all of these like liberal, white, queer folks that like lured up her name or Marsha P. Johnson, I'm like, you would cancel them. And how much we would lose, how many people we keep losing. And I want to uplift Kai Cheng Tom's work, who's a trans woman of color up in so-called Canada, that really speaks out against the ways in which like as queer and trans folks, we exile each other and does a lot of speaking to that from a perspective of being a trans woman of color. And for me, that community care needs to extend in the way in which harm is done to us and the way we harm each other and how do we stay in community, right? And away from the institutions, not trans, but a great writer, this is the last thing I'll say, Clementine Morgan, has a great zine called F the Police, We Don't Act Like Cops to Each Other Too. I think it really speaks to that idea of like, how do we respond differently to harm on all levels? Because if I'm an abolitionist, then I also don't dispose of people. And that's myself included. So it's a long healing journey. Thank you for those questions.
Yes, we need to change patterns, be accountable, and we need to do so in our communities. People are not disposable. And what each of you are living into and sharing so openly and so powerfully is the power that exists in community to make this possible, right? People talk about abolition as though it's a scary thing without understanding that when we are looking at others the way we look at our family, that we want to hold them when they cause harm, that we want to support them and love them when they cause harm and help them find a better, different way, that extending that beyond ourselves into our communities is how we make prison abolition a safe reality. So thank you both for living that and embodying that. Welcome back to Justice Radio. I'm talking with Tyler Redsky, a queer non-binary trans settler who I have had the pleasure of beginning to know through our transformational and abolitionist approaches to restorative justice. And Ebony Harper, founder of California Transcends, a trans activist, human rights activist, and champion of intersectionality. Before the break, we heard about various mechanisms through which trans and other non-binary folks have had to protect themselves in the context of a society whose systems continue to cause them harm. And so now I'd like for us to turn to the power of connection and community in the development of agency and the ability to own your own story and make meaning of the pain and suffering that have led you each to this point today. And so now that you are both at a point of doing so, what enabled you to be able to own your story and make meaning of your life experience? This time I'd like to start with you, Tyler.
These body questions, they're like right all up. That one's like really in the chest area for me, just holding that. I think the most vulnerable thing I can say is that I had to do the work of believing that I wasn't bad. Like, I think I really, like, the society that I was brought up in, there were good people and bad people. And I had heard for so long and always rejected it as a trans person that there was something wrong with me. But I grew up in a really abusive home. And I grew up long before I was trans, hearing that I was bad and wrong and witnessing all forms of violence that a little one could witness. I took that in and created patterns of violence in my own life. I think that there is like all of these compounding factors. I didn't ever think I would live past 20 something. I didn't think it would matter if I did, and I could never think of that. I had no, you know, when you're so in your trauma and so activated all the time, so focused on survival, there's no future planning, there's no dreaming, right? It's like now, right now, this moment. And I think trauma for me, it collapses everything. It collapses time and place, senses. Just lived in like a really necessary hypervigilance. I mean, Ebony, what you said, it was always a matter of life and death. Like getting on the subway in New York wasn't safe. I mean, I shared one story, but there's endless. Like I remember riding my bike. I mean, like I have so many stories of strangers, not even people that were clients, not even people that I dated, but just strangers on the street assaulting me or threatening me. Just for example, and that was New York City, right? Like this is not some tiny town. This isn't Maine right now where I am in. This was New York City. And undoing all of that work and doing the work to realize that there aren't good or bad people, there are people, and really starting to feel seen. Like I had humans that showed up in my life and loved me as I was imperfectly, not on a pedestal, not from a distance, and helped me integrate and own my story as sacred. I'm not religious, but I'm definitely spiritual. And I connected that to spirit and developed my own relationship to spirit and prayer and ancestors, especially since I didn't have connection to blood family. And also someone who on my mother's side is white and Irish, and on my father's side is both Sicilian and highly mixed, from Malta to the Maghreb of North Africa to Swana crossroads of Lebanon and Syria and Palestine, Greek and Turkey. It was being so cut off from any form of culture and connection because I was kicked out as being trans and no one in my family wanted to talk to me. So I had no way back to cultural connection. And learning recently that, you know, those from the crossroads or the Swana region, Levant, it's like some of the highest numbers of in the diaspora, like more than 50% are not on homelands. And so for me, it was just finding my way back and believing that my story had a place. And now doing the work that I do, it's really about learning how to hold harm differently. Like that's why I'm here. Learning that this colonial empire, the violence that's a genocide against the people of Palestine right now, is the same mechanism that created the genocide against indigenous people in Turtle Island and all across the world that enslaved Black people. It's the same mechanism. And so learning how to do work against the institutions and the structural violence and making sure to unlearn that in myself, being able to show up with people in relationship and complexity and believe that I'm not bad and still hold people accountable. Like I'm not going to let that anything fly. That needs to be said. Like who's willing to show up and learn and do the work? That's really where it is for me. And a long, long journey, still in it, not out, not healed. Want to be really clear about that. Still in progress, very much. Good days and bad days.
Aren't we all? And isn't that a healing journey and an ongoing one? You know, that's something that that I've found as a baseline connector, as I've been able to come to know you a little more, Tyler, and even in this short time of coming to know you, Ebony, as someone, even though I may be cisgendered male, Black man currently incarcerated, fitting a whole bunch of stereotypes, there's a lot of resonance in feeling other than, of feeling bad, of feeling excluded, growing up in communities, growing up here in Maine, predominantly white, 92% at last count, and just feeling outside the pain, the internalized pain that comes with. That's been a resonance that it doesn't matter who you are, what identity you wear. When you really boil it down, we all speak the language of pain. That's something that is easy to forget and that I think we really need to remember when and how we move through the world. So thank you, Ebony. How have you been able to own your story?
Thank you, Tyler and Leo. I would say self-acceptance, accepting myself in a way that is unshakable, unmovable. Something I didn't have in my youth. This is what it is-ness. I had the boldness. I had the drive to go with my internal makeup and just be led naturally by my internal design. With age, especially into my 30s, there came a self-acceptance I would have likened to a spiritual experience that shifted my perspective, that allowed me not to just outer present something, but there was just an internal superpower that just enabled me to thrive. There was optimism, a belief that things can be better, they will be better. And I also want to affirm that we stand on the shoulders of our trans elders that aren't as known as Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, that were sex workers on the corners, and that we have our healthcare today because of those folks that were unwavered and went through way more ostracization, way more violence that we went through or can even think of, but they held tight. And so I also stand on the shoulders of other Black trans women that stood in the gap for me, that took me in when I didn't have a place to stay, that showed me and protected me. And I also have the trans folks that were my age that sistered me up, let me cry on their shoulders, that I even fought with, you know, even those fights were a lesson. There's so much, and Tyler touched on a lot of it, that enabled me to be able to own my story. I say that trans folks are born activists, because usually the first person we have to activate is for ourselves. And then we see all our friends around us going through so much. And so we have to, you know, activate for them. We have to advocate for them. We have advocated for our friends or our other trans folks more so than even ourselves. And so just a lifelong evolution of self-acceptance, community has enabled me. And I would say even allyship. People like you, Leo, who may have a totally different life, comes from a totally different side of a fence, but has extended an olive branch and say, you know what? I don't know. I don't have all the correct terminology. I don't know your why, but I know what they're doing to you is wrong. And as a Black man, I can empathize with you because I have been ostracized and hurt by similar systems. And that's what it's about. Humanity first.
Thank you. We cannot let people walk away from this thinking that there is nothing that they can do. Of like, oh, that was a great conversation. Appreciate you sharing. No. Might there be a specific call to action for our listeners? What is one thing that people can do? Tyler and Ebony.
So many things. Advocate for us, alongside us, not for us, I should say, in terms of legislation. Look up your state and see what anti-trans bills are being passed and call up your reps and make a huge amount of noise. Find your local trans-led organizations and donate and show up. As with all things, nothing about us without us, right? Like the fight for trans rights and liberation have to be centered and led by trans folks, specifically trans women of color, who are always most vulnerable to the systems of violence. Realizing too, if you're someone, I always say this to white folks, like if you're someone who all of your friends are white and cis and straight, like what are you doing? Like that's not the world, right? Like we're the global majority, those of us that aren't white. Trans and queer folks are amazing. And I think relationships matter, and not in a tokenizing way, but in a way that we seek to understand the places around us. Like we are everywhere, and we've led to so much culture that people benefit from without understanding the ways in which we have pushed culture forward and made this world a more beautiful place. You know, by pausing to think what pronouns, what a beautiful opportunity it is to allow the fullness of someone's humanity and to slow down and be present in a moment. Why are you bothered by that? Or understand that someone may change their name. Like, everything we do creates more spaciousness for cis folks, and to really honor that. And I think those are the kind of things I want to say, and that to just thank the folks that do love us and show up and walk with us as survivals bound up with each other. That's really important. And just because I know we're out of time, I want to thank my wife for doing that every day.
Always thank the wife. Yes. Beautiful. Thank you. Ebony, call to action for our listeners. What can they do?
I believe in the activism of giving. There is a lot of trans serving organizations out there, like Transgender Justice Project, located in California. But where we need to really strategically give is in the South right now. They're going through more attacks, which is restricting them from getting resources from their local governments and state governments, which was never a thing, actually. We, especially in the South, they're not supporting trans folks. They've always been under-resourced. So it's important. There are places like Take Resource Center, led by Darnisha Boyd. There are several Black trans-led organizations in Florida, which they're really kind of have their own underground railroad as far as getting trans people services kind of secretly, but they're doing it. And so finding trans-led organizations, not HRC, that's not trans-led, Trans Law Center, they're a huge organization, could use the resources, but I would rather you find like a smaller trans-serving organization that needs the resources and support. And so you can even support California Transcends here in California, but my advice is focus resources towards the South. And also, if you see any trans GoFundMes, any community fundraising actions, make sure to support individuals for, you know, so they can pay their rents, so they can get therapy. I've seen an array of support needs. Yes.
Thank you. The activism of giving. Please do your homework and give. And so thank you, Tyler Red Sky and Ebony Harper, for utilizing your pain and struggle to educate and encourage those of us, all of us, who need to know. And I will close with thanks to bluesman Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series, and to Luke Brown and Aaron Pyle, our sound engineers. I'm Leo Hilton. We are Justice Radio.